the biggest stories from the pages of the London Free Press and lfpress.com. This is the London Free Press Podcast with your host, Rachel Gilbert.
Welcome to the London Free Press Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Gilbert. What kind of news stories do you like to read? Which local news do you care about the most? Here at the London Free Press, if you're reading online, we can tell which of our daily stories is the most read, of course. So we tallied up the year's most read stories to create a list of the top 50. And today I'm talking with London Free Press digital editor Patrick Maloney about what they are and what draws us in. Hey, Pat, how are you?
Rachel, how are you doing?
Good. Okay, so we've tallied up the top most read stories, top 50 stories of 2025. And I'm looking at these stories, trying to find some kind of pattern in this grouping and, you know, how to talk about them in general. But I really can't. Like, there really isn't a pattern to all these stories. Are you finding the same thing?
Well, it's an interesting point that you make. And I think it speaks to the nature of online readership. So, you know, it can be hard to predict what story, not always, but it can be hard to predict what stories will really generate a lot of readership. So, obviously, we have subscribers, we have daily users, we have people that are with us every couple of hours, right? Multiple times a day. Mm-hmm. But you also got this other tool, right? Google Discover. Like when Google pushes a story out towards the people that are using Google as a search tool, that is a massive readership driver. And it's very hard for us to predict what Google is going to use, you know, which stories they're going to grab and which ones they aren't. So our most read story of the year was about here's what you need to know about these $200. No, it's about electricity rates. Here's what you need to know about electricity rates going up in Ontario.
Yeah.
And that story drew massive readership because it was a London story. So it had a lot of interest from London readers and readers from our region.
Oh, no, you were right about the checks first. That was number one.
Yeah, it was.
But the electricity is in the top 10.
It is, yeah. So the $200 checks, that story is relevant to everybody in Ontario. So readers from outside of London would have seen that story, whereas, you know, in the old days when there was just a newspaper, they wouldn't get that newspaper. So that's part of what drives it. That's part of what drives the unpredictability. And that's part of what I find so interesting. You better do a good job on every story because you don't know which one is going to catch fire and which one's going to draw a huge audience. It's really interesting. So that story in particular was really well done.
Yeah.
And it did very, very well. And that's kind of, I find that kind of interesting. I find it fun to sort of see how are these stories going to do.
Well, it's a great headline, too. Five things you need to know about the $200 Ontario check in your mailbox. It affects all Ontarians. And then immediately when you read that, I think, what do I need to know? What do I not know that I need to know? Right. So
it's absolutely a local story, too, because a lot of people from here, too. So,
of course.
But it can be hard to predict. And to your point, it can be hard to find a pattern sometimes.
Yeah, so I couldn't find much of a pattern, but you can kind of group them together. So speaking of those checks, I think maybe there's several stories in the top 50 that affect everybody. The checks, the electricity, those kinds of stories that affect everyone or a very large portion of your readers, right?
Yep.
There's other stories that I think you could group together. I found there's a few stories on the Hockey Canada trial.
Obviously, a huge event in the city this year and lasted for months and had national implications. So in fact, I would even say maybe even an international audience for that story.
Yeah.
So that's what would drive a lot of those, right? And it's so interesting to me that you mentioned that trial because that verdict came down in late July.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do the math here. That's 5 months ago, more than 5 months ago now. And it's so interesting to me that in our job, we can kind of mark time, right? You can remember doing something, you've done it, now it's published with a date on it. To me, the fact that 5 months has passed since then is hard to believe.
Actually, when you said 5 months, I was like, no, really?
I mean, it's crazy, right? And the heart of the trial was sort of April, May, right? So that's even longer ago. And, you know, it's interesting to watch how it's evolved. One of those five players, they were all acquitted, is now back in the National Hockey League.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of the other ones have signed professional contracts in other leagues. But it is an interesting kind of thing about the way that the job marks time, and you can remember doing it, but you certainly can't believe that it was that long ago. But here we are.
Do you find that salacious kind of stories like that attract more attention? People are like, whoa, what is this about? You know, it's because it's mind blowing sometimes to read things.
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, criminal trials draw a lot of interest because they're fairly fascinating. And, but no, I mean, you can look at the top 10 list. There's not a lot of I would call like TMZ type
Mm-hmm.
scandalous stories in there, right? I think our readers are pretty sophisticated. I think they're pretty smart, and I think they're interested in stories that have a sophistication to them. And I think that's reflected in the top readership stories. But of course, there's always going to be stories where, heartrending things happen, tragedies, homicides. Those are going to draw big audiences too. But I do
Yeah.
think there's a sophistication to the readership.
It's fascinating that people, we read a lot of stories that directly impact us, and then we read a lot of stories that maybe have nothing to do with us, but are maybe just so far from our own lives that are they're fascinating.
Well, that's part of what I think is so interesting about this job. One thing I've found is people are fascinated with behavior that is unique, particularly social. Like the ultimate antisocial act is a crime. So people are very pro-social. Most people are very cooperative. They're law-abiding, and I think they're kind of fascinated. How does that happen? What did exactly happen there? And I think that's what draws them in. And we see it over and over again, and you can see it reflected in those top 50. So yeah, crime stories generally do have always been an important focus of all newspapers, and it still is in our newsroom.
Okay, the number three most read story is about a man who died after allegedly having 17 beers at a bar. I think this was in Woodstock. And it's a one-off story. There wasn't much else to this. It didn't have legs, as we say, necessarily. But why was this number three on the list, do you think?
Well, interesting question. And I think if you go further back on the list, there is a follow-up story with the family members of that person. And I think part of what that was, again, like very well reported by my colleague, Brian Williams. Thought it was packaged well, had a really interesting headline. And I think people understand the nature of, or they want to understand the nature of substance abuse, right? S situations like that, right? And this, I think that might be what draws them to something like that particular story. And Brian then spoke with the man's family for a follow-up story, and very compassionate reporting, really in-depth reporting. And the family was very gracious to talk to us. And it was, frankly, I found the story fascinating. It was one of the most interesting stories we did this year. So that's also part of it too, right? You and I we're talking about how many people read the story. But for me, I'm also like, what's the most memorable story just in my mind? Because we're kind of dealing with it every day. That one stands out to me because the family was so gracious. The reporting was so compassionate and the story was so unusual. And but it did draw a huge audience for sure.
There was several, at least one major tragedy on the list, but major tragic stories typically get a lot of readers, viewers, listeners, wherever you're reporting it. It was four people killed in a crash northeast of London. I think it was a student and the teacher, students and teacher.
Yeah, they're from Washington.
And this was just such a horrific, emotional tragedy for that area. But I mean, everybody here reading about it too, right? I mean, this is people from your community, and a lot of them, like, so sad.
Yeah, and I remember talking to you about it in the week or so after. And anyone who has a teenager or has a kid in school, has a kid who plays sports, right? And these four teenagers and their teacher were going home to Walkerton from a softball tournament with the school team in Dorchester. And you can relate to all that, right? And
Of
again,
course.
we talk about marking time. I mean, that was 7 months ago almost. In fact, I think it was 7 months ago now. And so a tragedy. But I think part of it is it just touches people because they can put themselves in that situation and say, oh my goodness, right? That they can really feel the pain. And so, and in a community that size, I think it's 8,000 people in Walkerton, just absolutely devastating for the community. And you'll
It
recall
is.
too, of course, the prime minister weighed in on that. The premier, of course, did, right? So that was a big story. And frankly, I thought we did really good coverage, and we did very extensive, very sensitive coverage, but it was a tough one. That's one that you just don't forget.
Absolutely not. No. Tariffs and the local economy were a huge topic, also the most read stories, but also here on the podcast, we talked a lot about auto manufacturers, how tariffs are affecting just generally the local economy. The number one most downloaded podcast, actually, of all time is Trump Tariffs and an update on the London region's auto sector. Why do you think we were so interested? I mean, this does affect most people,
Yeah.
but what's your opinion on why that's so
Was
popular?
that episode in March, maybe? Do you remember?
It was in June. It was
Was in
in
June.
June.
So, like in the February, March, April period, there was a real emotional reaction to Trump and the tariff threat and the 51st state rhetoric and that sort of thing. But the sharp end of that spear was the auto sector. And we live in the auto sector, right? From Windsor to Cambridge. It's a massive employer in this region. So there was an emotional reaction, and then there's of course the economic reaction. There's so much uncertainty. Our coverage, I thought, was excellent. My colleague Norm DeBono covers the auto sector better than anybody. The coverage was really good, and three of our top 20 stories were all related to the Trump tariffs. And there was a period of time there where those stories were just absolutely explosive in terms of readership, because it was such a hot topic and such a, frankly, an emotional topic for people.
Yeah.
And I think when I look back, you know, as you and I age and we get a little older and we look back on 2025, that's the big story that will have proved to be sort of a hinge point in the way we live. I think that there's a real change that's happened to our lives because of those Trump tariffs. We still don't know the exact fallout yet, right? That obviously there's other issues facing the auto sector. We know this, a slower than expected uptake in the electric vehicle revolution, for example. Consumers aren't as interested in it. But then there's positives, right? Like Volkswagen, their PowerCo subsidiary is going to be hiring 3,000 people to make electric vehicle batteries in St. Thomas in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
But I do think the tariffs are shorthand for Donald Trump and America's relationship with Canada, going from one of cooperation, friendship, almost a family type thing, to really adversarial. And I think we're going to see that potentially as a permanent change. And Mark Carney has kind of, I think he's hinted to that, right? He said, our relationship as we knew it with the United States is over. So as we go on in time here and we look back on 2025, that will be the story that marked a real change in how we lived and how the economy functions here.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we are looking as a country just elsewhere for other opportunities, right? And not being so reliant on the States. So I think you're right in that it will change the way we do a lot of things, do a lot of business with the world, manufacturing, importing, exporting, everything, right? So,
and a huge part of the tariffs toll is on auto, and we are the auto belt.
Yeah.
So it's and you don't have to look very far to find somebody you know who's been affected by this.
It affects a lot of people here. Yeah. We actually had some fun stories on the top 50. Two London restaurants are among the top 100 in Canada.
Did very well.
There are a couple of fun stories like that on here. Why is that? Is because, you know, we read that and we go, oh, I want to go there. I want to see why it's so good. And it's right in my backyard, right? That's
it's so
fun.
It's so interesting that you would mention that, because I was talking to my boss the other day about this. And I can remember, this would be about 2003 or so, our editor-in-chief had a copy of the print newspaper, and he'd written a number over each headline. And he could see exactly how many people had read each story online. He was amazed by this, and he was showing everybody. It was kind of revolutionary, right? That, you know, as internet news dawned, you could be very precise and see this is the story that everybody wanted to read today, as opposed to, you know, the editors kind of saying, this is the one that's most important, which would be, of course, based on experience, their own intelligence level, their news judgment. But those numbers, you can't argue with those. So anyway, I look back at that era, that bygone era, and I think restaurant stories would have been the thing that were not taken seriously.
Yep.
And if you look at them now, they are so popular. And I think it's just people have a lot of really good experiences in restaurants. Nobody gets sick and then says, I'm going to a restaurant for dinner tonight. Or, you know what I mean? Has some terrible thing happen to them. Says, let's go. You know, look, it's always something kind of celebratory or something relaxing. And I think restaurants,
that's a good point.
They have like a really positive role in people's lives. And so the numbers do not lie. Readers love reading about restaurants. They love it. In fact, this month we did a story about, do you know the Malibu restaurant that's on Dundas Street?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Everybody knows it, right?
Everybody does.
It's been in the same spot for like 60, 70 years. And it looks like, right? It's just part of what's so cool about it is it's such a cool diner. Anyway, it moved this month and we did a story that said, hey, you know, it's about to move. And here's what it's like for the owners and the staff and all that stuff. Then the readership was off the charts, because I just think people have a real affinity for that diner. People just like the place.
Yeah.
Right? And to me, it's like, I could see it 25 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, an editor saying, who cares? It's just a restaurant moving. That's not news.
Exactly.
But we know now that it is news because people are so interested in it. And to your point, there's the top 50, whatever it was, the top restaurants in the country, a couple of local eateries were on that list, right?
So
good for them.
And I want to know what they are so I can go there.
Go there next time I'm doing something celebratory. And it's a cool thing. Yeah.
It is a cool thing. Yeah. So how do we track this kind of stuff? How do we, of course, this is online only. Anybody getting the paper copies of the paper, you can't track that. But how do we track this? And you did talk a little bit about how that has changed how we do some of the reporting, right? And the stories that we choose, because we know more now of what people actually want to read, right?
I think it's helped us. I mean, in a lot of ways, we're still doing the same things we always did, but it's also helped to inform, it's made editorial decisions a little more democratic,
right?
it's not just me, the editor, saying this is what the community should know about. This is where we should focus our energies. Of course, there's a part of that, right? You're a journalist. You're working on your podcast. You're saying this is what I think we should do an episode on today, right? Mm-hmm. But when you have that kind of the analytics, when you have the numbers that show what people are interested in, it's a chance for the community to say, hey, we're interested in reading about this. So cover this or cover this less, right? Or whatever. So, but yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's part of a total revolution in journalism that's ongoing. And I find it really fun. I really like, it can be unpredictable and I find it fascinating.
And it's a bit of a challenge because it forces you as the journalist and reporter to think differently. Like, oh, that's not what I would have chosen, but that is what people want to know about, right? So it's a bit of a challenge. It forces maybe us to grow a little bit as reporters. And
yeah, and it's a reminder. Like, what are you doing here? You're serving the community, right?
Sure,
you're serving
of course.
And I think it's always important to remember that. And so we published the top 50 online. I hope people will read it. And I think it's a nice reflection of the year that passed, which, by the way, like, seems like it flew by. I don't know, 25
seems like it flew by. It's such a cliche thing to say, but I think you're right. Yeah, it really did.
So I hope people check it out and I hope they find it interesting.
The one thing I wanted to touch on is what we didn't find in the top 50, what we didn't have people read about. And we focused a lot on our podcast here about housing, homelessness. I think there's a couple, maybe one or two homelessness stories in the top 50. But a lot of how we did a lot of things on housing on the podcast. And there's lots going on at City Hall and with local developers with housing. Yeah. I mean, there is lots happening. But are people not interested in reading about those stories and how that's affecting everybody? Because it does affect a lot of people, you know, renting, buying homes, whatever.
Of course. Yeah, I don't think it's that people aren't interested. I think people do care. I think I've seen enough in this community to know that people do care about the homeless issue and those struggles. But
right.
I think it's hard to read those stories, right? Mm. I think they can be emotionally kind of difficult to read them. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's got something to do with it. But again, kind of guessing there, right? Not totally sure, but you're right. There's a lot of coverage of it. It is a big issue and it's going to continue to be a big issue into 2026.
Sure.
But
yeah.
They didn't show up in the top 50 of 2025. No, they didn't.
Of the most read. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to publish the list. This list is online at lfpress.com for you to check out. And maybe you can look back on some of those stories if you want and read through them if you miss them.
Yeah. I hope people find the list really interesting. And it was a memorable year for news for sure. Thanks for having me on, Rachel, to discuss it.
Thank you. I'll see you next year.
You got it.